WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. It's Friday, which means it's time to look back on the past 7 days and make sense of the biggest stories in our weekly news recap. From President Joe Biden stepping down from his re-election bid.
The president is putting his support behind his vice president to serve as the nominee.
To the release of body cam footage of a heartbreaking fatal police shooting.
The Justice Department says it's assessing the deadly police shooting of Sonia Massey, the Illinois woman who called 911 about a possible prowler, only to be shot and killed by a sheriff's deputy in her own home.
And a massive development plan that could transform Chicago's southeast side.
Former steel mill site on Chicago's far south side will have a new purpose.
To dive deep into those headlines and more, I sat down with freelance journalist Lee John Greco, reporter and anchor for CW26 Brandon Pope, and City Hall reporter for the Chicago Tribune Jake Sheridan. Now, since Kamala Harris kicked off her presidential campaign last Monday with a rally in Milwaukee, I started by asking Brandon how Democrats are campaigning across the Midwest. Here's Brandon.
When you think about Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, the potential to flip a place like Indiana that's on the map, you think about it, it seems far-fetched, but Barack Obama won Indiana in 2008.
He sure did.
Some would calculate Kamala Harris might be able to energize Democrats to be able to do that again. It's been fascinating to see this rise that she's had, this honeymoon period she's had. You saw Zoom calls with 44,000 black women, 65,000 black men, mm-hmm. and then a Zoom call just yesterday with...
Just women.
Yes. 200,000, breaking a Zoom record.
And so, raising, I think, some $2 million.
Absolutely. Energy is high.
Yeah, energy is high. How important do you think the Midwest is for the Democrats, Lee?
Well, I think it's crucial. I think it's something that the Democrats made a mistake with when Hillary was running in 2016. And I think they're seeing that they can't do that again. That's part of the reason I think that the DNC is coming here. That and the fact that, you know, Chicago is a union town and Atlanta, which was the runner-up mm-hmm. for the DNC, is not. It's also not, you know, totally Democrat control the way Illinois is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think winning the Midwest is really key here. And I think that's also why Democrats are looking at VPs in the Midwest as well.
Mm. You were in Milwaukee last week for the RNC, weren't you, Brandon?
I sure was.
You went viral with a couple of tweets, too. We'll talk about that separately.
Yeah.
But what was the vibe like inside the convention center and outside in the city?
Oh, you got to remember this is immediately after the assassination attempt on President Trump.
Yeah.
The vibe was actually very celebratory. Like, they all had a feeling of let's move forward and talk about transition. The election's done. And it was interesting. I also think what was fascinating, too, is the energy, the confidence, but also the attention on certain messaging. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch how this election goes with messaging. When you first get into Wisconsin, there was a Trump 2024 sign mm-hmm. and it said no taxes on tips. I was like, that's an interesting, obscure thing to really push. And I kept hearing it from surrogates, no taxes on tips. And then Trump mentioned it in his speech. I recognized, okay, this is a virtue signaling policy here to working class people, for one, and business owners as well, who are scared about tip minimum wages and potentially hurting their bottom lines.
Right.
So that is something they've been pushing heavy, this everyday working class type of policy. It's going to be interesting to see what the Democrats and Kamala Harris can also do to show people that are working class backgrounds that they got something for them, too.
Yeah. I think that's so interesting that they singled that out, because I think these economic issues are where Republicans are realizing this is where we can tip not only a swing voter, But, you know, a moderate Democrat, I mean, look at the fight that we had in Chicago over the tip minimum wage. Yeah. Look at the fight Washington, D.C. had over that. Both of those are seen as very liberal cities. But once you get into people's pocketbooks, then they start thinking a little differently.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, this week on Reset, I sat down with a panel of Illinois delegates to talk about what needs to happen in order to secure Harris's nomination. Now, here's Alex Zapian. He's the township supervisor of Lockport, Illinois, and a delegate for the state. Now, he's reacting here to the idea that Kamala Harris could soon be the president.
I am extremely excited to nominate Kamala Harris, you know, hopefully the first woman president ever, and the first woman of color. Is just historic.
Does that sound similar to some of the reaction you've heard? Lee, how are Illinois Democrats feeling overall about Harris now being at the top of the ticket?
Yeah, well, I was talking with, you know, consultants earlier this week, and there was such a huge turn from where Democrats were, you know, just a week before, really a day before. You think about where we were on Saturday, thinking that Joe Biden was just going to slog through this race. And then when I spoke with consultants, they immediately predicted Harris is just going to bring in so much money, which she already has. As you mentioned earlier, there were these calls with women, with black women who really seem to have energized the base.
Yeah. And I think and that was after the, what was the historic 24-hour record that she made, right?
Exactly.
81 million.
Right, right. So I think on the fundraising side, she's really, you know, hit a chord there. And then also she's very strong on some of the issues that Democrats need to hammer home this election, abortion. And then, of course, you know, she has a background as a prosecutor. That is, you know, very attractive when you have an opponent like Trump who is convicted.
Yeah. And I want to hear from you all on this next one, because the Democratic news that we're all waiting for is who will be the vice presidential nominee. And our boy, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker, he's being considered, Lee. So let's start with you. What's the latest there?
Well, I was at the security meeting yesterday that the DNC and FBI and U.S. Secret Service were hosting. And then, of course, the conversation turned to J.B. Pritzker, who's there. And our boy J.B., he loves to play coy whenever folks ask him about presidential ambitions or right now VP ambitions. He basically said that he hasn't spoken this week with the campaign. There was a Sun-Times report earlier that said he was talking to Harris about joining the ticket. He wouldn't confirm that. So, you know,
yeah, well, we've been hearing that there was a call on Wednesday to gauge his interest.
And he was dancing around that. I think your colleague Olivia asked him, you know, but have you spoken with the Harris campaign this week? And he basically said, well, of course I'm talking with the campaign because he's supposed to be a Biden surrogate. So, you know, he's kind of
keeping it vague.
Exactly. Exactly.
What are you hearing, Jake?
You know, I don't know necessarily more than y'all about J.B. Pritzker's specific prospects, but, you know, one thing, you know, I'm from North Carolina. We have a Democratic governor too, Roy Cooper. I kind of think he might have a better shot. Same with Mark Kelly in Arizona or Shapiro in Pennsylvania. Those are Democratic governors who have this similar mold, fit the bill, but that they're in swing states. They're in states that have a bit more electoral impact. So if voters like those governors and they can be added to the Democratic ticket, it might help Kamala Harris more than, you know, adding J.B. Pritzker in deep blue Illinois.
What do you think, Brandon? I mean, does it seem like Pritzker's on the short list?
He's definitely on the short list. I think he's lower on the short list than the others. I think in a race like this, the swing state factor is major. But overall, too, and I do believe this when I talk to Democratic sources and Republican sources on their VP picks, what matters most is, can she work with this person? And so there's a wide pool of people, Andy Beshear in Kentucky, not necessarily a swing state, but might be a guy that she might vibe with. Josh Shapiro, Pennsylvania, she's got a relationship with him. She's worked with him before. She doesn't know J.B. Pritzker as well. So, you know, I think those things factor in as well. It's going to be interesting to see what the calculus will be from the campaign, because there's still not a lot of evidence to support that a VP pick necessarily propels or makes a dent. Some could argue 2016 Mike Pence may have benefited Donald Trump.
Yeah.
When I was covering the election in Michigan, I definitely heard a lot of, I don't like Trump, but that Mike Pence, that's a good Christian conservative. So, you know, that could be at play here, but it's hard to really calculate that. It's going to be fascinating to see who she gets.
How it's going
to
weigh. Well, preparations continue for hosting the Democratic convention next month. Meanwhile, Chicago is bracing for the possibility of a new surge of migrants being bussed up While the number had slowed down, we've all noticed that, right? Texas Governor Greg Abbott promises to continue sending migrants up north. And here's a little bit of what he said at last week's RNC.
I began busing illegal immigrants to Washington, D.C. And we have continued busing migrants to sanctuary cities across the entire country. And those buses will continue to roll until we finally secure our border.
Jake, how alarmed are city and state officials about this?
You know, I spoke with some city officials about this earlier this week, and they sounded pretty alarmed. I was kind of caught off guard at a city council hearing that I was expecting to focus on some other stuff. But they came out and said, you know, we expect a surge. And I talked to the deputy mayor of immigration, Beatrice Ponce de Leon. She used the number, a high-end estimate, it sounded like, of 25,000 people potentially coming to Chicago. Mm. You know, the mayor since has used the number 15,000, but they're preparing for the worst.
Do they mean just during that time?
Yeah, ahead of the convention.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I think I want to be really clear. You know, she used the word speculative. She also clarified that that would take things like Biden's executive order that was made in June that's sharply curtailed asylum seekers coming into the United States would have to fall apart one way or another. It is being challenged in court. But they are preparing for the worst. And they're doing that. They have a bunch of beds open already. About half the city's shelter capacity is available right now.
Yeah, so we're preparing.
They're preparing, and they also have, with the city, with the county, the state, and federal money, they're prepping to have, if they need them, just-in-time shelters that could stand up really quickly to potentially shelter thousands of people if this comes together.
The strategy here, ultimately, with the asylum seeker crisis is to expose a weakness for the Democratic Party. When Greg Abbott was at the RNC, he was pushing that hard. But also numerous folks I talked to within the Trump campaign, when I asked them, where do you see the most opportunity to gain voters, especially Black voters and Latino voters, they said migrants coming into cities. Mm. And so they're going to be using this constantly. Kamala Harris having a honeymoon phase right now, but once we start having more conversations around immigration, the border, and they're forcing this issue on cities like Chicago and New York again, it's going to be fascinating to see what that discussion is going to be like and how the campaign responds, what plans come forward.
Yeah.
Because I think all can agree the situation at the border is nowhere close to perfect or ideal.
At all. Well, Lee, I want to jump back to something you brought up earlier, right? The Secret Service did release details yesterday at that meeting about security for the DNC next month here in Chicago. What were the main takeaways?
Yeah, so as you know, the DNC is going to be held in two spots, at the United Center and over at McCormick Place. Now, the good thing is there aren't a lot of residents living in those areas. So if you look at the map that the Secret Service released yesterday, especially the United Center, you're going to see a red area and a yellow area. So the yellow areas where pedestrians can walk around, there will still be security there.
Okay.
And then the red area is more locked down. And, you know, much of United Center is surrounded by parking lots. So that kind of limits, you know, the amount of people and businesses that have to go in and out of there. And then it's a similar thing going on over at McCormick Place.
Yeah. But there are a lot of street closures around United Center, though.
There are,
right?
Yes. So if you do have to be in that area for some reason, United Center is going to start shutting down on August 17th, and then over at McCormick Place on August 16th.
Okay.
Now, the actual convention does not start until August 19th, and it goes through the 22nd. There are also going to be a number of bus lines that are impacted in those areas. So number 3 on King Drive, number 20 Madison, number 21 Cermak, the 50 on Damon, and the 126 Jackson.
Okay.
So if you want to make sure that you can get to your destination during the week of the DNC, what you're going to want to do is go to OEMC's website.
Mm-hmm.
They're also going to have an app, and that is going to update you on what is going on. And then if you do actually have to get inside the United Center and McCormick Place, just know that there is one area where, like, for example, Ubers and Lyfts will be able to get through. But there are going to be delays there. It's not like you can just pop in your Uber and go
get
it. It's going to have to go through security and get checked and everything. So
budget, a lot of extra time here.
And if you don't have to be in the area, just avoid it that entire week.
Honestly, if you don't have to be in Chicago, I would say just,
just leave.
Just leave. Just go to, you know, Michigan or something. Go to the beach.
Go to the lake. All right. So these new security details, they came on the heels of Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle resigning on Tuesday. This was the day after being grilled by House lawmakers about the July 13th assassination attempt on Donald Trump. So, Jake, do you think that this raises concerns about how prepared the Secret Service will then be for the DNC?
They've said, they said earlier this week that this hasn't changed the plans that they've had, that they feel confident that they can have a secure convention. So, you know, I think there's going to be, of course, added attention to the Secret Service and how they perform here. But, you know, I don't think this really changes what they're going to do.
One of the people questioning the Secret Service director on Monday was Democratic Congressman Roger Krishnamoorthy. He represents Illinois' 8th District, Chicago's west and northwest suburbs. Let's listen to a bit of that.
Let me turn your attention to some conspiracy theories that have been circulating and ask you to comment on them. First, you have not found evidence that the incident was a staged shooting, right?
Correct.
And you haven't found evidence that this was a result of a conspiracy of high-ranking government officials, correct?
Correct.
And you have not found evidence that this incident was, in fact, directed or perpetrated by a foreign state or entity, right?
And that's the last question, but I'll let the director answer that, please.
Not at this time.
What do you think, Brandon? I mean, have the conspiracy theories around the Trump shooting all been debunked now?
I'm not quite sure we've gotten as many answers as we would need to get. I think it's still not clear exactly did a bullet hit him, what hit him. Mm-hmm. There's been speculation out there that there were shards from a teleprompter,
it was glass,
yeah. Things like that. I think ultimately that's really the issue here, the communication, the lack of transparency in the mm-hmm. investigation. How could you have such a major failure in breakdown that yeah. could have led to something devastating happening? Someone losing their, well, someone did lose their life, but
right.
a presidential candidate losing their life as well.
Yeah.
So there's definitely got to be more transparency, accountability. That Secret Service director stepping down, I think it was to be expected. You had a bipartisan calling for her ouster, even AOC, you know, getting yeah. praised by conservatives. Who would have thought that ever happened? By calling on her to her face to resign.
Yeah.
So absolutely. But to be frank, conspiracies, we're at a time where with misinformation, disinformation, it's getting harder and harder in these echo chambers to yeah. debunk.
They're going to swirl for a while.
They're going to swirl yeah. everywhere, and they're going to continue throughout this entire election.
Yeah. Let's get Illinois' reaction to some other national news here. Democratic North Shore Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky was one of dozens of lawmakers who boycotted Benjamin Netanyahu's speech Wednesday. This was his fourth time addressing Congress. Brandon, did other Illinois lawmakers, what did they do?
Yeah, so Bill Foster of Naperville, he called Netanyahu incompetent and self-destructive. Mm. And this is, you know, after he expressed support for Israel's right to defend itself while also saying that he's got an issue with Israel's handling of how they've had their Gaza campaign. Something, a line that many Democrats mainstream have had to try to walk delicately. And it's interesting for Bill Foster, you know, he won his primary race in Naperville to try to keep that Democratic nomination seat. He was running against Kasim Rashid, who was coming from the left flank and really pushing him to call for a ceasefire, pushing him to take a stronger stance.
Yeah.
And here he is, you know, quite a few months later, it was March when he won the primary, actually doing it. And so, you know, it's clear 9 months, 39,000 Palestinians have been killed,
yeah.
Mostly women and children. And Netanyahu right now still says he's continuing to do this until what he says is the total victory. What that means, it sounds like it means more devastation and more killing. And so mainstream, what this means big time is like for Kamala Harris, she's got to walk a delicate line here.
Yeah, the war in Gaza, this is going to stay in the headlines during the presidential campaign.
And it's going to stay in the headlines, too, with the VP pick as well, because where do they stand?
And yeah. Kamala Harris has already been praised for having a more empathetic tone mm-hmm. Toward Palestinians compared to Biden.
And so it does seem like from what we're seeing in Congress, you know, and also Dick Durbin called out Netanyahu months ago, was one of the first senators to do so. But it will be interesting if Democrats actually enact policy that matches this tone at all.
Yeah. So in D.C., thousands took to the streets to protest Netanyahu's speech. At the same time, pro-Palestinian protesters here in Chicago did the same thing. So clearly still an issue that's on people's minds here. At this point, a coalition of some 200 groups says that it still plans to hold a march for Palestine, bringing attention to the Gaza war on the first and last days of the DNC. So Lee and Jake, I mean, protesters, they're still sparring with the city over the protest route, aren't they?
Yeah, it's they basically have their route. The question really comes down to whether they take a turn on Washington or not as they kind of move above the United Center. The zone that came out yesterday would suggest that they do have to take that turn, but it sure seems like they're going to have that march. It's going to be really close to United Center, within sight and sound. They're going to be able to rally in a park, two parking lots north of the convention. So while they're still fighting, it's just definitely going to happen.
Tragic and disturbing news out of Springfield, folks. Now, the conversation will be upsetting for a lot of listeners. It has certainly been upsetting for those of us who have seen the body camera footage. It was released this week. This is of the police shooting of Springfield resident Sonia Massey. Now, it also got a lot of national attention, including from the White House. So I'll turn to you first, Brandon, because this video still sits with me now. It's startling. It's baffling. I mean, have you been able to make any sense of it?
No, because there is no sense to it.
Like, how does a woman who calls the police out of fear of an intruder end up shot in the head by the police in her own home?
And then not even, you know, have the empathy in the moment to give her aid of any sort after you shot her in the face. Like, that, to me, it's just callous and really cold. The family right now, they're calling for an investigation of the entire thing, especially how this officer, his name is Sean Grayson, 30 years old, why he was allowed to even be employed. There are records that show that he worked at six different police departments in 4 years. Mm-hmm. He had two DUIs. However, as of now, there's nothing that indicates he left or was dismissed from those jobs because of any police misconduct.
Right.
So still looking into that. But he has been fired from the department for this. He's been indicted by a grand jury on multiple charges, 3 counts of first degree murder, multiple counts of aggravated battery and official misconduct. But those charges, they don't help keep Sonia Massey alive, right? Like,
right.
The family still has to deal with the fact that in her own home, she was shot and killed. And she's part of a growing list of Black people, and specifically Black women, killed by police in their own homes. We can think about Breonna Taylor for one. Just tragic to see.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the history for Grayson is troubling, right? And James Wilburn, who's the father of Sonia Massey, he's been very outspoken as to, you know, your point earlier, just how was he even hired in the first place? Civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump is representing Massey's family. Now, he compared her death to other well-known cases of police violence that we've seen against African-Americans, like Laquan McDonald, like George Floyd. I'm seeing many people, including celebrities, come out and speak out and say, you know, frankly, when is this going to stop? Like, when are we going to stop seeing this happen? I mean, have you been seeing some of that public outrage?
Absolutely, but also a lot of public trauma. I mean, I think we all have a collective trauma from, I think we are thankful that we have police body camera video now, right? To be able to have transparency and see what's happening and not just take the he said, she said accounts. But what it also does, because it plays, you just scroll through social media and it might be there. We're seeing a lot of trauma. It's triggering and it's tough for a lot of people. And so you're seeing an outcry of pain. There's a collective pain here. And just when you think we're getting better and we're making progress, you see something like this happen to draw us a few steps back.
Absolutely.
It's really disheartening.
Well, this just in today, the autopsy report of Sonia Massey has been released by county officials in Springfield. The report shows that 36-year-old Massey died from a gunshot wound under her left eye. She was shot by then-Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson, as Brandon mentioned, and Grayson has since been fired. charged with murder and has pleaded not guilty. We're, of course, going to continue to follow this story in the coming weeks and months because we're not done talking about this.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move the conversation back up to Chicago. Now, the city is targeting two new defendants in its historic lawsuit against gun manufacturer Glock. What are the details of that, Jake?
Yeah, so the city sued Glock in March. You know, this is an effort to, as the city always tries to address gun violence, to put more of the onus on gun manufacturers for putting some of the most dangerous kinds of weapons on the street. So Glocks, they can be modified with what's called a switch. And basically, that allows the gun to operate more like a an automatic weapon than a normal pistol. And they're illegal, but they're pretty easy to obtain. And so the city sued Glock in March, but they rescinded that lawsuit and refiled it while suing Midwest Sporting Goods in Lyons and Eagles Sports Range in Oaklawn. Those are two gun stores that the city says in its lawsuit are responsible for a really large amount of the guns used in crimes in Chicago.
I see.
WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so there were a couple of big development stories this week as well. First, a massive development plan that could actually completely transform Chicago's southeast side. It's an area that we know has struggled since U.S. Steel closed more than 30 years ago, Jake. Give us details of that.
Yeah, so PsiQuantum, a quantum computing company, is building a center at the U.S. Steel Southworks site. And it's not just them. It's actually going to be a whole park dedicated to quantum computing, this really promising technology. The mayor says this could have a $20 billion economic impact. The site's been dormant for 30 years, and it's a massive site. So,
yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, there are still remnants of the old plant there, right?
Yeah. And it looked like in the renderings that that's actually a park, parts of it. And parts of that will still be there, but they're filling in a large amount of the land with this new development.
Yeah. Note to self, homework for tonight is catch up on what the heck quantum computer commercial development. what do they do?
I'm sure it's on Reddit somewhere.
I looked it up. I looked it up last night because I was expecting this.
Basically, what is this?
It's a computer that uses quantum physics to solve problems that the computers that we're using right now can't handle. So they can solve problems that could have huge implications for, you know, things like finding cures for cancer or trading stocks better, every use possible. And they can do tasks our computers do way, way faster. So it's a really big deal.
Okay, Tony Stark.
Thank you. Jake. Yeah, no, anyone who's ever driven by there, they can't miss it. It's 440 acres of land right there on the lake that's been abandoned since 1992. For decades, it seemed ripe for development, but lots of different plans have fallen through. Any concerns, Brandon, that this ambitious development could fall through as well?
I think when it comes to development, the big concern is always how long is it going to take? What delays are going to come? The traffic that's going to be caused? And also, is there any plan here? What's the community impact going to be? Or is there going to be affordable housing? Will there be benefits for the community? Are people going to be priced out? I think those are the things that people are going to understandably be talking about, debating throughout the coming months.
Do we have a timeline, Jake, on when this quantum computing campus might become a reality?
They want to get this going by 2027. They want to be working here and not working on developing it, working on, you know, quantum computing stuff. And you know, there's while the community stuff is really important to figure out, the money's on the table already. The state has put up $500 million to support this quantum computing park and another $200 million for PsiQuantum. The city and county have thrown in money, too. So, you know, I think this is going to happen, yeah.
Mm. Do you think, Lee, that this massive project will help the Johnson administration sort of shed that reputation for not being pro-business?
Yeah, and I think the Johnson administration has been trying to do that through, you know, a number of different initiatives. They had the Cut the Tape initiative. They had this $1.25 billion bond plan that is also supposed to spur development. So I think the Johnson administration, a little more than a year into his tenure, is trying to turn a corner on that after they had a number of progressive wins that were great for their base. We were talking about tip minimum wage earlier. Obviously, that was a huge victory for mm-hmm. them. They got 10 days of paid time off as well. But those were things that the business community fought tooth and nail.
Right.
So now I think they're trying to balance this out. I do think that this quantum initiative, though, is really a huge feather in the cap for Governor Pritzker as well. He's been at the forefront of this. He's kind of a self-described nerd when it comes to quantum. So that, I think, is something to look for here as well.
Interesting point. Now, Jake, quick question. Has Mayor Johnson talked about whether this could bring back jobs to the Southeast side?
Yeah, you know, I think they're hopeful that that it will bring a lot of jobs. You know, there'll be a lot of specialists who do quantum computing coming in for sure. But I think the city is really hoping that this spurs more development around the area in the Southeast side.
Lots of economic benefits, right? Owners of the Bulls and Blackhawks outlined their ambitious plans for the United Center. It's being called the largest investment in the area's history. You wrote about this for Block Club Chicago, Lee. What are the details?
Yeah, so remember I was talking earlier about how the United Center is pretty much surrounded by parking lots right now?
Yeah.
So the plan that the United Center owners, which also include, you know, the Rheinstorffs, they own the Bulls and the Wurtzes, they own the Blackhawks, is to basically transform all of those parking lots into retail, housing, public space. So you're going to have these nice parks that are elevated above parking spaces so you can still attend the games. In the first phase of this development, there's supposed to be a music hall, and they all bragged at this big unveiling that they had earlier this week that they were going to put in $7 billion of private investment, so no city money. Mm-hmm. Now, that is absolutely wonderful, especially when you think about all of these teams that are asking for public money, including the Rheinstorffs, who own the Chicago White Sox. So
yeah.
I asked, and a couple of other reporters asked about that, you know, hey, you're putting in $7 billion of private investments. Don't you have the money for a new White Sox stadium? And they said,
what did they say?
Well, they said, we're not going to talk about that today. This is for this announcement. I also asked them, can you commit today? Because they said, we're not going to use any city money for this. Can you commit today that you will not go down to Springfield to ask for state money as the White Sox did? And they said, we will not go down to Springfield as the White Sox did, or the Bears for that matter, which of course was, you know, a little dig at the Caskies as well, who are asking for some public money.
Stadium. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this is really interesting to see how this is going to go. I mean, I feel like it changes the strategy that the White Sox are going to have as they, you know, put their hand out. But just the way this development will play out in terms of, you know, the different public funds that they can pull from this. For example, there's supposed to be a new CTA stop over there mm-hmm. on the Pink Line. And so they could actually use TIF money for that. That's something that you can use that for. But the TIF in that area, I think it's the Central West Side TIF, is supposed to expire in 2024.
Yeah.
So they would have to renew that, which is, of course, very controversial.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to watch.
Brandon, do you think that this, you know, development by United Center, does it have the potential to really transform the near West Side? Or, I mean, should we call it the West Side?
It's West Side-ish.
Where does everyone stand on that neighborhood divide?
I got grilled on Twitter for this, by the way.
As far as what this will do for the area, I mean, think about that area itself. Very residential, right? Not a bunch of, like, businesses around there. You got the goat and maybe some other things, but, like, it's not a lot. This could be big. Here's the thing. We all love mock-ups.
We all love the fancy pictures and drawings. I've seen so many in the last few times.
I love a good rendering.
Love a good rendering.
It's like every week.
Is it going to happen, though? It's like every, is it going to happen, though? Like, talk to me when you actually got it all fleshed out. Well, I mean, ultimately, selfishly, as a person who likes going to Bulls games, I think one of the annoyances of it is when you leave a Bulls game, it's not really a lot to get into that's close.
No,
you
know, not.
Unless you want to walk a little bit, and maybe you don't want to.
You gotta, maybe you want to buy your beers on the sidewalk.
Yeah. You got to buy them on the sidewalk. True. Get your fireball
shooters.
They are
available.
If there's a tamale guy, that's all I need. Just give me a street tamale and a Tecate, a Lucy. It's fine.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
Go.
A Lucy. Okay, Lee, let's go.
Before we take a pause, Jake, one other development idea that was floated this week could change DuSable Lakeshore Drive. What's that?
Yeah, so CDOT and IDOT have selected a design that they want to advance for a long-anticipated overhaul of North DuSable Lakeshore Drive. The one they picked would smooth curves around Oak Street. It would cut out traffic lights that are choke points. It would add bus priority on ramps. It would add, for our park lovers, it would add more lake fill, more beaches. And it would add a big pedestrian bridge to get to Oak Street. But there's a big thing that's missing here. There's really no transit-focused lane. All of the other options that CDOT and IDOT could have picked had things like bus express lanes. And, you know, the transit agencies or the transportation agencies, they say this will have more green space. Buses will go just as fast as they would have in the other designs, and it'll add less infrastructure. But activists who are pushing for a bigger
wait
focus,
a minute.
Yeah, they hate this. The,
like,
the transit activists are not happy with this.
But this is still in the very early stages, right, Jake? There are many, many more steps that would need to happen before this is a reality.
It was put at $4 billion project. The money is nowhere on the table right now.
It's going to be a minute.
It's long off, yeah.
You know what, though? This plan was not surprising to me at all. I've written about how IDOT and other state transit agencies plan, and basically the way that they calculate how highways should work and everything is, how do we get the most cars on this? And it's a very new idea, really, in the last 5 or 10 years, to even factor pedestrians and bicyclists into those plans. Mm-hmm. And this has been a major problem with IDOT. You see it on streets like Irving Park Road over on the north side that are IDOT owned. And you wonder, why is this functioning like a highway more than an actual street? And it's because they are thinking of it as a highway that prioritizes cars. And so that's why I think we end up with plans like this, is because they really don't know how to shift their thinking.
Folks, I wish we didn't have to talk about it, but nearly 200 former juvenile detainees filed a lawsuit this week. It's the third lawsuit like this that's been filed. Now, in total, there are about 400 adults that are saying that they were abused in juvenile detention centers around the state over decades. The details of what was largely sexual abuse are horrific, Brandon. How are you processing this?
Yeah, absolutely horrific. 200 men and women, this is dating back to 1995, with their alleging being coerced and forced into sexual acts.
Mm-hmm.
They're alleging that they sounded the alarm on this and were silenced. They were asked to be moved from this Westside Cook County Juvenile Detention Center near Westside, and they were shut down. And that even judges that were involved in those type of, you know, decisions, they were inactive. They took no action. Attorney Todd Matthews, he calls this a systemic failure. There's also, as you mentioned, other lawsuits that make this really a huge number, 400,
more
than 400 over 3 decades.
Right.
So this is a story we're going to be following for a while. It's swirling and just really unfortunate to see allegedly young people abused, especially at such a large scale.
And sad to say, there might be more.
And it's not the first time we've heard stuff like this.
Right.
There's been other juvenile centers here. The Illinois Centers for Juvenile Justice have also faced allegations like this as well.
So although the sexual abuse claims, they come from all over the state, as you mentioned, about half come from former detainees at the Cook County Juvenile Detention Center. I mean, are there efforts being made, Brandon, to change how the places run to safeguard these kids?
Currently, I've not heard of any new, you know, measures or plans to do that at all. But clearly,
there needs to be.
Yeah.
Because this just keeps on happening.
Yeah. I've just seen that Attorney Jerome Block said he's asking the Cook County Board President, as well as the chief judge mm-hmm. of that circuit court, to shut it down.
Yeah. And so far, nothing from Tony Preckwinkle or any Cook County officials yet.
All right. Let's put the bad news behind us, shall we? Jake, let's look to some good news. The Chicago Sky is going to have a new training facility.
Yeah. So the Sky are building a $38 million training center in Bedford Park. This is a huge upgrade from where they practice now in Deerfield. They had no lockers. A professional sports team with no private lockers. They had to walk past public Zumba classes to get their shots up.
Oh my gosh. But
this new spot, it has all the specs. They have a content creation zone. They got, of course, a strength room. They got a private kitchen. They got not one court. They got two courts. And they have lockers now.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's a big upgrade for this guy.
That is incredible. Brandon, you look impressed.
I am. I'm perturbed.
Well, I can't tell what that facial expression
is. It's a mix of just like the disgust at how bad the Sacks Recreation Center is. I don't know if y'all have been there before in Deerfield.
No.
It's where the Bulls used to practice in the 80s.
Wow.
That's how old
it is. You can just leave it there. If it's where the Bulls used to practice in the 80s, they deserve better. Jake said they have to walk by a Zumba class. How degrading. Zumba?
Yeah.
Of all things.
This really became a heightened issue for the Sky when former players, one, were leaving, you know, Candace Parker for one.
Yes.
And then Kalia Copper, who's now on the Phoenix Mercury, she went viral when she was talking about how well she's been treated by the Mercury, how she doesn't have to be hungry. She doesn't have to worry about where she's going to eat or a meal. Goodness. And things like that, it's just terrible.
It really is
so
terrible.
The Storm had new facilities in Seattle. The Mercury got new facilities coming. The Aces. Now the Sky joining the train as they get more revenue, more attention. It's caused some, growing pains for fans, for season ticket holders. There's a wave of season ticket holders who were really upset. Their prices nearly doubled on their season tickets.
Wow. But you got to understand.
Yeah. I guess that's growing the game.
And hopefully those season tickets will translate for better pay for the players.
Yes, that's the hope. I think the hope, too, is that they find a happy medium where you still are able to provide an affordable atmosphere as well for people. You don't want to price out your loyal fans either.
That's true.
It's a tough balance to strike.
We've got an update as well on some news that we covered last week. Charges were dropped against four Northwestern University educators involved in pro-Palestinian protests. The Cook County State's Attorney's Office dropped the charges, saying they do not prosecute peaceful protesters. How does this reflect on the university, Brandon?
Not good. I mean, the university acknowledged the charges in a statement and kind of defended them, saying that they, you know, have a, you know, a right to, you know, basically go after folks who are disrupting the campus environment, and they believe that these employees were doing that. They faced misdemeanor charges initially, but Cook County State's Attorney's Office cited that they don't charge people for peaceful protests and wipe those away. These employees, they told Channel 7, ABC 7, WLS, that they were bogus charges, and they think that it was a violation of the academic freedom that educators and students are supposed to have at the school. Mm-hmm. They're looking at what action they can take against the school. So this is a story I think that's going to continue going forward because a lot of emotions and the campus protests are probably going to continue as well.
And it'll be interesting to see how the state's attorney's office actually reacts during the DNC to any peaceful protests. You know, as you said, this is a policy that they have had, but whether that will hold during the convention, I think, is still a question. We saw the city bring charges against the O'Hare 40. Those were the folks that blocked the highway going out to O'Hare a couple months ago.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Exactly. But I believe Cook County dropped their charges there. So there seems to be a bit of a discrepancy between the way the city is handling these misdemeanors or, you know, things like blocking the public way, blocking transportation, and the way the state's attorney's office is.
And it's going to be fascinating to see CPD's role in this as well. I mean, they came under fire for their mass arrest policy they were talking about earlier. Yeah. They had to backtrack. So we got to see what their plan is going to be for these campus protests and the protests writ large we're going to see in, what, 2 weeks?
And the OIG says that they are not prepared. Sorry, the CPD, I should clarify, is not prepared. You were talking about, you know, oh, isn't it great now that we have body-worn cameras?
Yeah.
Well, yes, it is great
if you actually turn them on.
Yeah.
And you look back at the recordings and somebody is holding you accountable for that. You can't just have the technology. You have to use it.
Yeah.
Drivers on the Tri-State Tollway near Oak Brook had to do a double take on Monday. As the Associated Press reported, Oscar Mayer's Wienermobile got into a pickle after being involved in a rollover crash. No one was hurt. So don't get at me. I'm laughing, but no one was hurt. Okay. I can see the emails coming in now. No word yet on when that iconic hot dog shaped car will be back on the road, though. Another quick mention before we start wrapping things up. And this one's no joke. Hundreds of comedians are descending on Chicago this weekend for the I.O. Fest. So if improv interests you, you might want to check that out, folks.
It does. Yeah, I improv every day.
Yes. All right, so I got 1 minute left. Real quick around the table, what stories are you watching next week? You firstly.
I'm working on a transportation story right now for Bloomberg City Lab, just basically previewing how Chicago's transit authorities are going to get ready for the DNC. Are they ready? We're supposed to have, as I mentioned earlier, new Green Line stop over at Damon, which, so yeah, looking at that.
Yeah.
The Trib reported yesterday that CTA President Dorval Carter said we're supposed to use 250 CTA buses for the delegates. I believe that's down to 175 now.
Oh, it's a hot mess. I'll tell you that. That's your lead. Brandon?
Allegedly, sources say the VP pick for Kamala Harris is going to be, has to be decided by August 7th. So I think next week is going to be a pivotal week. We're going to be following that, and we're on Pritzker Watch.
Pritzker Watch. Jake.
Those were my two. I'm on vacation next week, so hey, I'm looking out for this pina colada. happy birthday to my mom. It's her 60th.
Yes.
So,
happy birthday,
that's,
Mom.
That's what we're doing, yeah.
My thanks to freelance journalist Lee John Greco, Brandon Pope of CW26, and Jake Sheridan of the Chicago Tribune. Have a good weekend, and happy vacation, Jake.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Andrea Guffman, edited by Meha Ahmed, and mixed by Micah Yasin. Now, in less than an hour, we break down the biggest stories that you need to know. But if you want a few updates throughout the week, sign up for our newsletter. It comes out on Mondays and Fridays, and you can subscribe at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again next week.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.